Hello, everybody. We're here today with a true legend, a true creator, with Dries Buitrad. Hope I didn't butcher it too much, Dries.
Oh, no, Dries,
Dries is what we call a real creator. He not only created a whole technology, but created a movement, an open source movement around a technology. So we're here today to discuss one topic that's very near and dear to my heart, which is digital product management. We see a lot of our clients, a lot of people trying to do it those days. There's a couple books and, you know, a couple bibliography talking about how to do it, but it's always easier in theory, right, Dries? So
yes.
we're here to the purpose of this web series here is actually, you know, here in front of trenches and people that actually have real business world problems to solve around that discipline and trying to dig deeper on that. But before we go, Dries, why don't you kind of just give us a little bit of what's your role today at Acquia and at the Drupal community, so we can kind of understand what their challenge is.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. So my role or roles, because there's really two parts to my story, Bruno. One is I started the Drupal project like 21, 22 years ago, a long time ago. And I'm still the project lead today. So I've been doing that for a long time. And for people that don't know, Drupal is an open source project. It's open source software that people and organizations use to build websites and powers a lot of websites in the world, including a lot of large websites. And I actually did that as a hobby project for the first 7 years. It's what I would work on at night, on the weekends, you know, that kind of stuff. And then after 7 years, I co-founded Acquia. And Acquia was born out of Drupal. Today, we're a digital experience platform company. So we're a technology company. And we provide different solutions for organizations that want to, you know, be digital winners, if you will. And that includes a lot of different things. But at Acquia, I'm the chief technology officer. And in my case, that means I also run product management and product marketing and a few other things. So that's briefly what I do. And I split my time between these two things.
Really cool, Dries. So a lot of our clients and people that we talk in the industry that are trying to kind of deploy the disciplines of product management, right? It's first of all, it's a very complex discipline because it involves usually like a tripod there, right? So people that run that discipline, they must understand the technology, they must understand the user experience, the customer experience that's mm-hmm. consuming that experience, right? And also the business side of it, how we actually make money, how the company actually get the return on that investment, right? So in those three disciplines, it's very hard to get into just one, under just one head, right? So so the first thing people struggle is like to find product managers, right? So who are those people, you know, those unicorns, right? Kind of that know that all, right? Because when you try to recruit from the industry, usually people are, you know, they're good in one or at most two of those disciplines because where they coming from, you know, the functions that they operate under, right? So where do you at Acquia or at the Drupal project, where do you find the most promising? I know, do you develop your own product managers? Do you hire them from the market? If you hire, like, where do they come from, those rare?
Yeah, yeah. They're probably the most difficult people to hire, as you pointed out, because as you said, they have to be good at many different things, right? They have to understand the product. They have to be business savvy. They have to be customer savvy, all of these things. So they're hard to find because very often, the very, very good ones, they actually end up becoming CEOs because in a way, a product manager is sort of a mini CEO. You know, they're the CEO of their product. And so, you know, often those people that are extremely good at product management, they often choose to become a CEO. Anyhow, to answer your question, one thing that has helped us, I would say, is depending on the product, We find kind of different ways to source them sometimes. What I mean by that is if we have a large and mature product, and then it's almost like domain expertise becomes a little bit less important, and it's more about sort of the operational discipline of running a product. So we can kind of recruit from a larger pool. Sometimes we find really good managers and they come from different departments and different disciplines, but they just have a good talent in being a manager. But like on the flip side, if it's about a new product, we're building something new and we want to bring that to market, and it's really all about market understanding and customer understanding, we've actually had great success recruiting product managers from our own professional services organization. Like Acquia isn't a professional services company, like we're a product company, but we have a small professional services team. I think it's less than 10% of our revenue actually right now. But that said, the people that work in our professional services organization, they have often worked with customers for, 5, 6, 7 years, and they've seen the customer problems, they feel the customer pain, they know what the customer wants to do. And we found that those can actually very easily be recruited as a product manager. And then with the right coaching and training, they become really good product managers often. Different strategies depending on the maturity of the product and the needs. But we try to recruit from within, and we've had great success with that. And obviously there's also classically trained product managers that have been a product manager at many different organizations that we have a lot of those people too, of course. But it's hard sometimes to learn a market and to really understand the customer needs. It can take years to become a true expert.
Yeah, it is so complicated of a problem that some of our clients that have decided to create kind of a teams of replace one person with two, sometimes three people. Yeah. So you have like a triad running a product, like a really kind of sharing the leadership of a product. Of course, has to be a certain scale, right? So we cannot have like a three people leading five, right? Those are big products, but they have this. This was a solution that some of our clients found. Like it's just so hard to find someone that has all the depth of knowledge necessary. Like they have like groups, teams of physics.
That's a strategy that can definitely work. Make little teams. A lot of the best product managers are stakeholder managers too, like even when they don't know everything themselves, which obviously most of them don't, they're really good at working with customers and sales and marketing and finance. Like they're really, really good at managing all the different stakeholders to kind of get the job done. And they're good at learning, they're good at processing information.
Good at knowing what they're not good at and find the right people that can
that's right them. That's what they have to be good at, right? Because it's impossible for one person often to do everything and be good at every single thing. But if you can, if you're good at, let's say, the sort of the market side of things, sometimes those people aren't as strong on the financial side of things, and then the good ones know how to work with finance, the finance teams and the department on how to kind of help get the support they need there.
I love the your analogy around the CEO, right? Like it's like a mini CEO, like because the product is a mini company, right? That they have their own, sometimes they have their own P&L, and they have their own results and clients and value proposition, everything that a company has, right? So which brings me to my second question, which is the one of the biggest struggles that we see is the definition what the product actually encompasses. Like what is the perimeter? What's the scope of a product, right? So there's even traditional companies are trying to kind of move from project to more product oriented. So looking at those platforms, ecosystems, and on those kind of the sum of their digital experiences, trying to put, under a product lenses, right? And then one question that comes up a lot is actually, if we're talking about a cross-functional, a mini company-like initiative, right? What's the perimeter, right? Where the product teams start and where they end, right? So what's shared and what's dedicated to that product. Right? So yeah. I'd love to hear your, in your experience, you know, how you guys been making that decision, like when you kind of make a team shared across a product, across different products, when you kind of dedicated people to a certain team. I'd love to kind of, what's the drivers, you know, behind those decisions.
Yeah, it's a couple of questions in there, I think. But
yes, that could be a book, actually.
I mean, there was a question around scope first, right? And then another question about teams, I think. So I think for scope, when we launch a new product or sometimes a large feature of an existing product, we always really like to start with identifying the problems that customers face. I think it's really important to start with the customer problem and also to make sure that enough customers have that particular problem, meaning there's actually a market problem, you know, there's an opportunity in the market to solve that problem. So we just try to define an MVP, first of all. And there's a couple of things that we really try to look for. One is when we built the product, the MVP product, we need to win in the market, you know? And so we call it, we need a plan to win. You can go build something, and if it doesn't allow you to win, there's no point building it. So we need to allow us to win. And secondly, we also want to get to market quickly. So we really strongly believe in delivering incremental value. Like, we need to be able to launch something in 6 to 9 months that provides value to those customers that have a particular problem. If it takes 2 or 3 years to build something and bring it to market, like, we won't even start the product. You know, it's just too slow to, and like, we can't start learning quick enough. So we're big believers of launching something quickly. And then you're just learning and iterating.
In 3 years, the problem they're trying to solve is probably a different problem.
Probably gone. Yeah, exactly. So that's what we try to do. And so we start with making a plan on what we want to do, a vision. Usually there's a vision, there's a strategy, and then there's a plan. The way the product manager goes about that is, as I mentioned, you know, he or she is the main person to build the vision, the strategy, and the plan. But very often, there's almost always an engineering leader involved as well, and very often a user experience person as well. So these three people are sort of the three legs of the stool that are creating kind of the plan, and very often architecture too. When I say engineering, that includes architecture, because we try to lead with user experience, and we also try to lead with architecture when creating these plans. And then, as I mentioned, product management is stakeholder management, right? So before we actually start writing a single line of code, we run these plans by every different department: sales, marketing, support, finance. And every department has a critical role to play. You know, sales need to say, yep, we can sell this. If you built this, we can sell this. You know, marketing needs to figure out, if you build it, how are we going to market it? How much does it cost for us to market? So they need to, they're part of the plan, frankly. Like, they have to kind of figure out the right budgets. And support is another part of the plan, because they have to obviously support the product and the feature. And they usually have a lot of questions around, you know, how can we automate the right thing so we don't have to do everything manual? Have you thought about provisioning? Have you thought about this? All of those things. And then obviously finance is a key stakeholder too, because whenever you build a product, you need to make sure you can deliver it, you know, at the right cost. You know, like, it has to be usually profitable, and the cost has to be in line. And, you know, finance usually wants to understand the impact on the growth of the company, the gross margins of the company, these kinds of things. So again, everybody's involved, really, you know, in figuring out the plan before we write a single line of code.
To my second question, let's say then you start, let's say you get approval on the plan, you know, start doing it. So do you happen to have a rule of thumb, like who should be dedicated to their product? You mentioned, for example, like the engineering and customer experience. So are they usually kind of put them dedicated, like a team, you kind of slice a piece of that engineering team and dedicate to that product, or they continue to kind of reporting, you know, to the head of engineering, and they're just like a they're project mm-hmm. they're projectized in that product. Yeah. Right? So how do you deal with the engagement? Yeah.
Yeah, usually engineering is dedicated to the product, for example. And actually part of the plan is figuring out how large of an engineering team do you need, that kind of stuff. Or it gets a little bit more tricky or nuanced, at least in our case. And by the way, Acquia, we have like 10 or more different products. So that's also important to know. Like we're a multi-product company. So for example, when it comes to user experience, we have user experience people that are dedicated to a product, but we also have some shared user experience people. And that's important too, because there's pros and cons to both, right? Like if you're dedicated to a product, the user experience person or people, they can really become an expert in the product. They can do research, all the kinds of things. So they start to really know their customers. They also start to know competitors, for example, in the market. And that expertise, that knowledge is very valuable when trying to build a product. Now, we also have shared UX people, as I mentioned, and the reason for that is because we also want to provide sort of a consistent experience across our different products, right? And so we want to make sure we think about things like single sign-on or consistent
design system that's kind of a
exactly
across.
That's right. And so those functions in our world at Acquia, they're kind of centralized. And we have that for most disciplines. So we have centralized or shared resources, as well as dedicated resources for most disciplines. That includes user experience, as I mentioned, but it also includes architecture. So our chief architect sits across all of the different products and makes sure there's a certain amount of consistency around architecture and choice of technology components, so we're not building things in, you know, seven different competing technologies when we don't have to. The same thing with like QE or QA, you know, quality assurance, quality engineering, like, because across all of the different products, we want to have one definition of what we call a SEV 0 or a SEV 1. These could be, you know, outages, right? So like you want to have some consistency across all of the different products. So that is driven by shared resources, but then every product also has its dedicated resources. And that's probably only important when you're a multi-product company like we are. But in a single product company, fortunately, things are a little bit more easier that way.
Yeah, no, I was asking from the lenses of most of our clients are kind of a traditional companies trying to digitize themselves and getting more into the, you know, to what the best practices of digital natives as yourselves at Acquia, for example, do, right? So, and what their reality is usually they're coming from a very function-based structure, right? So where mm-hmm. they have engineering, they have architecture, they have all the teams, but they organize themselves. What crosses all those functions usually is a project, right? Right. Which kind of is born and it's completed and goes away, right? So so that's when kind of trying to shift from that paradigm, from a product paradigm, from mm-hmm. a more where products are more alive, right? So products you put in front of customers, you never just do a project and let them go into maintenance mode, because then you're screwed. You actually have to always keep improving them all the time, right? So which brings us to the operational model of a product, mm-hmm. right? One of the biggest benefits that we see trying to convince them to move to this operational model is actually to get the engagement of the people, right? So when people feel more connected to something that is touching clients and customers mm-hmm. and seeing the result of their decisions and their work in a more immediate form, as you put it, like, you know, just short runs, right? Short deliveries, nothing like one of the problems, like when you work in those function modes, it can take years to see the result of your work, right? When you kind of move to that different organization design, you see it, you know, and usually improves engagement, right? People feel that their voices are heard, their contributions are, you know, taken into mm-hmm. consideration, and they feel more engaged, and you know, then and they will contribute to the success of that product, which is absolutely key, right? So I wonder, you know, if you can draw, and I was really curious to see what the if you can draw parallels from your work at Acquia, which certainly, you know, by organizing it the way it is, I'm pretty sure, you know, mm-hmm. you have that engagement out of people, and you know, and you have the, you see the motivation of people geared towards that. But what how do you compare to the completely different type of engagement, which is the open source world, yeah. right? Where people just literally work out of their 100% of their intrinsic motivation to do something.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. And it's very different. I can tell you that. And it took me a while because, as I mentioned, Drupal predated Acquia. So, yeah. you know, I had a certain way of doing things in Drupal and my leadership style in Drupal, which was working well in Drupal. And then when I started Acquia, I had to learn to adjust my leadership style, but also like how you build products in a, yes. in a for-profit company versus in an open source or nonprofit style environment, right? So as you pointed out, at Acquia, there is different constraints. So when we built a product, obviously, you know, we wanted to make money. We have a limited budget and that kind of stuff. So we have to work through a lot of these things. In open source, it's not about making money. We don't really care about money in a way, you know? And so it's very different environments. But also the leadership is different too. Like in open source, I really have to lead, let's say like 100% by inspiring and motivating people to go in a certain direction. I have to paint a picture of like, here's what we could do and what Drupal could be if we do these things. And then hopefully people feel inspired and excited to contribute to Drupal in that direction, which is great. And obviously at Acquia, in a for-profit company, you do the same thing, really. You hope to inspire people too, but sometimes you can also say, you know, enough discussion, here's what we're going to do. No more debates. You know, we've listened, we've incorporated people's feedback. Let's go. In open source, it's harder to kind of say, all right, no more debate. You always have to listen to people, always have to incorporate their feedback. And, you know, don't get me wrong, that's wonderful too, but it's just a different, you know, way of going about it as well.
Yeah, I was just super curious because, you know, we mm-hmm. see as a kind of a big trend, like not only in the corporate world, but mainly in the corporate world, but overall as a society, we see a big trend of tapping into people's intrinsic motivations and mm-hmm. try, you know, corporate world, try to align with personal motivations yeah. and
it's important looking in the less, corporate world.
Yeah, looking less of you know, in terms of an extrinsic motivations and more on intrinsic yeah. motivations. I wonder if you have kind of applied any of your learnings into the open source community at Acquia and what yeah. those were, like what are the things.
I think it's important to have, as an organization, it's important to have a purpose and a vision. You know, a lot of people are purpose driven. They want to be part of something, you know, that betters the world. You know, it sounds a little cheesy, but it's true. I'm the same way, right? And so it's important to help people recognize the value that an organization brings to the world and to others in the world. And, you know, in open source, it's in a way more natural. in a for-profit environment, it's maybe sometimes less natural, but it's often there. I mean, you know, you can talk about Acquia and what we do and how we help improve digital experiences and how we help people share and publish their ideas. And like, there's a lot of, you know, we help thousands of nonprofits, we help thousands of higher education organizations, and they have important missions in the world, right? And so we help important organizations fulfill their mission, which is, you know, improves the world too. So whatever it is, there's usually a why that really will inspire people to become part of your organization. You know, the fact that Acquia, and by the way, CINT as well, like CINT, I mean, as you know, you're one of the largest contributors to Drupal. That is a nice thing that employees love. You know, they love being part of an organization that gives back to the world. And that could be through a contribution to open source. I mean, that's what a lot of people join Acquia, because we understand open source. we want to help advance open source. It's not just about making money all the time. It's also about giving back to different organizations that are part of our ecosystem or that we depend on or that we, you know, that we take advantage of in a way, you know, or that we get the benefit from, I should say. We can also give back to these organizations, which is nice.
Yes, it is. It is nice. And quite frankly, I think we'll become table stakes quite soon, like because, you know, like people that are talented and can do what we're talking about here, which is very difficult. Yeah. They can pick, yeah. you know, to work for whoever they want, whatever they want, whenever they want, right?
So, yeah, especially with remote work becoming more of the norm. You have more, every engineer, let's say, or every employee has more choices of where he or she could work because everybody's hiring remote people. So it creates a more competitive situation. It requires organizations to be a more compelling employer, you know, which is great.
And respectful, and respectful of their desires, right? Mm-hmm. Their ambitions to contribute, like, and how they will, what's their purpose, and align, try to align those purposes and motivation, right? Because it's, I think we'll be long gone in a couple of years. We'll be long gone that the years of, you know, would tell people what they have to do. It would be really hard.
Either
people are doing out of, you know, that's what motivate them to achieve those things, you know, like, and they're what organizations are just creating is just trying to create that alignment, you know, like really provide the space to them to kind of to do what they love, right? So that's.
Right.
That's what I hope it will happen, you know, more and more in more corporate in environments. And quite frankly, I think would be amazing, right, to see, you know, in environments that are today are kind of stale, and I think will come up to be, you know, vibrant places for people to work and really thrive.
Let it be true.
hope we can see more of that, more you know, Drupal communities and more, you know, Aquas out there.
Yeah.
Well
Driss, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. And I'm sure there's a lot here for people, you know, that are looking for implement those ideas to actually tap into. So thank you so much for your kindness to join and share your wisdom here with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, man. See you soon. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.